This is Tractor Tuesday Live, hosted by sixth generation Nebraska farmer and Tractor Tuesday founder Zach Bosley and Scott Anderson, owner of New Age Ag Supply. Join them each week as they sit down with farmers, innovators, dealers, and creators who are enhancing the culture within agriculture, right here on Tractor Tuesday Live.
Hey, we're live, Tractor Tuesday Live. I'm here again with Scott Anderson, New Age Ag Supply. And today we're lucky to have our friend Jordan Carson's on the show. Jordan, I'm not sure how many years or generations your family's been farming, but for those that don't know, Jordan's a farm kid turned walk-on football player, had the opportunity and had a heck of a little run in the NFL as well, came back to the farm in Iowa, and happy to have you on the show today. Jordan, how you doing out there?
Doing great, Zach. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. And Jordan and I have known each other for some other reasons over the years, and we've been really lucky to work with Jordan on some of our nonprofit side for the farm athletes endeavor, and obviously getting farm kids that are into sports and extracurricular activities. It's always a big thing for us is to try to support other kids that kind of grew up the same way that we all did here in this room today. But Jordan, if you want to go ahead and kind of introduce yourself, where exactly are you from, and give us a little bit about your background.
Yeah. My name's Jordan. I'm a fourth generation farmer, actually, in central Iowa. We farm in three different counties here in central Iowa on a corn soybean farm. We do a little bit of hay. We have some hogs and a few cows. So there's currently three generations involved in the farm. So it's my dad and his two brothers, my brother and my cousin and I for the second, and then we're slowly bringing in the third generation with our boys. And it is a pleasure to be on here, and always excited to talk to you, Zach.
Yeah, well, thanks. No, and Jordan's done a lot of work for us kind of behind the scenes and helping us get things organized, again, back on that nonprofit side of things. But, you know, it's always interesting. I like to ask people that were far superior at athletics than I was, you know, how big was your guys' graduating class? And, you know, what was the competition in high school like, you know, being from rural Iowa?
I think my graduating class, we had about 45 students.
Okay.
And our football team was about that same size. I think we had between 40 and 50 kids on the team. A 1A school in Iowa at the time, which it only went up to 4A at that time.
Okay.
So pretty small town, small school. It's actually five towns together in one school. Mm-hmm. When I first started school, it was three, called YJB,
okay,
Yale, Jamaica, Bagley. And then we merged with Panora Linden and became Panorama High School. So, played football. I actually didn't play football, organized football, until I got to high school.
Okay.
As I grew up, my dad had a rule when we were in junior high, and there really wasn't any football before junior high. You could go to a different town and play a peewee, kind of a peewee league, but we didn't have anything locally. So, my dad had a rule when I was growing up, we had to pick one sport because, you know, we had other things to do. So, and we lived 17 miles from town. So, you know, if you had to get to practice, or you're either finding a ride, or if we had an activities bus in junior high, that's why we could do it. So, he made us pick one sport. So I picked basketball in junior high. Did that for those 2 years, and then decided I was going to switch to football.
Okay. So
first organized football was a freshman in high school. And I can remember, you know, because my brother was on the team at the time, and talking to him before the first practice and kind of going over what all the positions were. I didn't even know really what all the positions were called and what they did. So it was pretty green coming in. Had some great coaches in high school, and kind of grew into this body that I have now. I was pretty small when I was a freshman, a real late bloomer.
Okay.
So I didn't play varsity football, really. I played a couple of plays when I was a sophomore, but didn't play varsity football until I was a junior.
Yeah. Oh, it's just amazing how that works. And I think it's a great lesson for a lot of other people. And what I always like to hear is I've got a few other friends that actually made it to the league and did different things at a high level. And it's funny, the guys that had great success and accomplishments in athletics, they don't push their children, you know, in the same way that some of the guys that, you know, they think that sports is such a great thing. And I think there's obviously some benefits in it. It correlates to what we're doing in agriculture to some degree, but I love hearing that, oh, okay, our buddy Jordan here played in the NFL and didn't pick up a football till he was probably 15 years old. I just think that's hysterical. And, you know, when I went to college, I met a few people that never played football. One guy was a receiver, never played until he went to college, you know, and just, he was just that type of freak athlete. And I think the moral to the story is, you got to show up and you got to just enjoy it, you know, and enjoy it for the purity of what it is. And there was a couple of girls on the basketball team at UNLV that literally never played basketball until they got into high school. And I think that's the moral of the story. If you're an athlete, you're an athlete. Now, more importantly, did you guys always have hogs growing up, or what was the livestock games looking like?
We did, yeah. So we had a few cows when I was younger. My grandpa was into cows. When he passed, those went away.
Okay.
So, but we always had hogs. Yeah. And, yeah. We loaded hogs early in the morning before school. So, that kind of knocked out any before school activities. And those back in those days, though, that really wasn't a thing. I mean, you could lift before school. Some guys did, but
yeah.
And this really isn't that long ago, you know, 30 years ago when we started at that level, but it's just not even close to what it is today. My son is a junior in high school, finished up his junior season. And I mean, they're involved in football from, they started in June and they're done, you know, in their last game. So it's just totally different now. And it's challenging for those kids that want to play, you know, all the sports or more than one sport, just going from one to the other, or even some overlapping. So just totally different than it is now.
So, and was that it then in high school, just simply football? You didn't continue with basketball at all?
I didn't, no, despite many. So when I was a freshman, you know, I was in junior high, I was a little bit taller, you know, but not really. So, you know, I played like a 2 or 3 guard.
Okay.
And, you know, I was not good at all.
Yeah.
And so I knew I really didn't have a future in basketball. And then I was starting to grow a little bit in high school. So, but I was like, as a sophomore, I was probably 6'3" or 6'4", 180 pounds, 170 pounds. So, but no, that, and that rule still stood in high school. One sport was it. So, I stuck with football. That was it. And I did spend a lot of time in the weight room. And I had I started with a weight room in our basement, our unfinished basement. And then about halfway through high school, we put up a bench, a kind of a little workout area in an unattached garage. It wasn't heated. So in the winter, that made it a little challenging. But
Right. And were you always just strong and in that sense, just kind of a freak in the weight room, or just it came?
No, I wasn't. You know, I can remember my 8th grade year, I had a goal that I wanted to be able to bench press 95 pounds by the end of my 8th grade year.
Yeah.
And I'm not making light of anybody that does more or less than that. That's
right.
Just wasn't a freak of nature at all.
Okay.
And so, you know, I think by the time I graduated high school, I don't remember. It was probably triple that, something like that. But that certainly wasn't natural strength, you know, between what I did on the farm and, you know, like I said, growing into this frame that I have now, because, you know, I have really long arms. So, but that was something I had to work for.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when I met Scott for the first time in person, I think he was surprised how, you know, big I was. And, you know, just so Scott knows, Jordan's probably my height, probably at least 6'6" or so. And, you know, but he is just, I don't know how you fit through a door frame, Jordan. You know, he's built in a way that, yeah, if you wouldn't have made it to the NFL, I think a lot of people would have been upset. And it's just, it's really interesting because you barely made the team as a walk-on at Iowa State. Is that correct? You were kind of deep on that borderline of the roster and you almost didn't, you know, make the cut at 105.
Yeah. So going into my freshman year, I actually wasn't on the 105. I wasn't a preferred walk-on. So I was going to show up to the freshman tryouts, basically the first day of class, not even at camp. And I had the opportunity to play in the Iowa Shrine Game, which is an all-star game for Iowa football players, after my senior season of high school. And one of the assistant coaches from Iowa State was at that game because his son was playing in it. Normally college coaches aren't allowed to go to that game, but he was able to go because his son, Joe, who ended up being my college roommate, he called his dad and said, "Dad, we need to get this guy at camp."
Okay.
So, I did well at the Shrine Game. And, as soon as that was over, I got a call from the coaching staff and they brought me into the 105 because it was like the next week, the next Monday after that or something like that. So went in and I don't know, it was just a strange transition, you know, going from didn't think I was going to really even start playing football until like the end of August, first September to now you're in it. So they brought me in, I started practice right away. And, you know, I really, that first year I made my hay on the scout team.
Okay.
It was the scout team player of the year, which is an award they give out for an offensive and defensive player, every year at Iowa State, or they did. And, so I got that award, just kind of went from there. And honestly, when I got there, I was probably this height, maybe an inch shorter.
Okay.
But I was like 225, 230. And so, I owe a lot of it to our strength coach, Matt McGettigan, who was Iowa State's strength coach at the time. You know, he put me on a nutrition plan and a weight program and really showed me what I had to do to put, you know, put the weight on I needed and put the muscle on I needed and then, you know, work on my speed and agility and all that. But the nutrition program is not, you know, what you think of when you think of college athletics today. It was, you know, here's what you need to eat, but you're going to have to go buy it because we don't have the facilities that they have now. Our training table was in just one of the dorms at Iowa State at the time. So, but yeah, I can remember my dad or my mom and dad gave me just as many packs of frozen pork chops as I wanted. And I had a George Foreman grill in my dorm
room. Limited pork.
Unlimited. It seemed like, And so, I had that George Foreman grill in my dorm room and, you know, I'm pretty sure they had to put in a stronger breaker because I kept kicking the breaker in my dorm room and like the whole floor too. But no, I was just cramming the protein and eating as much as I could, and which at the time was great. I don't think I appreciated it. Like I order a large pizza and eat the whole thing myself. So
right.
If only I could still do that today.
Oh man, that's my problem. And you know, Scott over here, he's in great shape and he's been a very devout carnivore now for how many months, Scott?
First week in January will be a year.
Jeez,
No carbs, no fruits, no vegetables, no sugar. No, I quit caffeine, all that stuff, just water and animal products, which I have chickens on my farm. So I drink 20 eggs a day and then beef, you know, so.
Yeah. And the guy looks like a pro wrestler. You can't see him. I'm not going to ask him to take his shirt off or anything weird yet, but yeah, I mean, it's just, it's amazing how different people's bodies react, you know. And when I was a senior in high school, I was around 220. And the whole point of it is that was kind of my peak weight. And you look at a guy like you, Jordan, I mean, God dang, your wrists. I don't even think they make watches big enough for a guy like you, you know, and I don't wear those types of things anyway, but you know, I'm long and dainty, but I kind of reached my peak weight. And then you learn with these different programs, well, maybe you're actually a little bit too big. And then that almost turns into what your position and what your role is going to be moving forward. When you started off at Iowa State, did they even have a position in mind, or were they just letting you kind of just see where you'd find your level?
Yeah, I was the defensive end in high school, and I thought that was the position I wanted to play based on my size. And so I played that my first year. But I think I did move inside for scout team a little bit, because I can remember one of the guys that that was a starting offensive lineman just really hated me, and he was a guard. He's a good friend of mine now, but really didn't appreciate the effort that I was giving day in and day out. But so I started as a defensive end, and they moved me into defensive tackle, nose guard, probably that first year. And, you know, I can even remember having conversations with coaches about moving to offensive line, because they're like, dude, you got this frame.
Yeah.
You're not the fastest guy in the world. You should maybe think about moving to offensive line. You'd probably make a better offensive tackle than a defensive tackle.
Okay.
And I didn't listen, of course, because I thought defense was way cooler. And you had the opportunity to sack the quarterback. So that was kind of my thing. So I just stuck with it, and, you know, worked on my size and my speed. And, you know, I got to the point where, because of the work that I did with our coaches and, you know, all that, that I was able to improve on all that stuff and be competitive at that level, just in my second year, even, because when I moved into that redshirt freshman year, because I redshirted that year, played on the scout team, and then had the opportunity to play, my very first game as a redshirt freshman, the guy that I was the number two, the backup defensive tackle, and the guy that I was backing up went out with cramps. So I played most of that game.
Wow.
It's some other injury too, I think, but yeah, I played most of that game and made several tackles and ended up being player of the game, defensive player of the game that game. So,
jeez.
Nice.
But yeah, I was still a tad undersized at that time. So I still had some work to do to get to, you know, the level of all Big 12 defensive tackle, stuff like that. But it was quite the journey for sure.
Oh, it's just a heck of a story. And that's why I really wanted to touch on it for all the farm kids that are paying attention today and watch this on the replay. It's definitely possible. And the hardest thing is just being comfortable enough with yourself to believe and have these types of goals. You know, and it's just, it doesn't have to be about going pro in sports. I mean, you can honestly go pro in life. And I think that's a message that we'd like to push here a little bit. It's not all about these things that people naturally gravitate to. It's very similar. I spent a lot of time in your neck of the woods and, you know, more so in Dallas County and State of the Lake at Panorama there. There's a hotel and stuff. And with some of that other business I used to do, I was out there quite frequently, but it seems very similar to how we grew up over here in Adams County, Nebraska. And really same type of a thing. You see a lot of these farm kids and they just, you know, these more rural farm kid schools just tend to have the bigger boned athletes. And, you know, it's a big thing, but it's just so many people just, they focus their attention on that a little bit too much. And there's more to it. You know, and my dad and mom were feral to finish on 100 sows. And I think the moral of the story is I loved contact. And I think that's what was so fun working with animals and livestock. You know, you're loading sows into the farrowing house or you're sending pigs. It's an aggressive move. You know, you're holding the panel, you know, you're getting that type of feedback from the animal. And then they're so unpredictable. And I honestly think that really farm kids make the best linemen. You know, most of us probably don't have the speed to be the skill position type of guys, but I think that's a lot of it. You know, it's just that contact and that back and forth. And there are so many athletes that have backgrounds in agriculture. And so that was something that we really were excited about. And then, you know, our stories kind of stop being similar up until about age 18 or 19. And then, you know, what you ended up doing, when were you announced to be a starter then at tackle? Was that your redshirt sophomore season or?
Yeah. I think maybe my freshman year, I started one game because of an injury.
Yeah.
We graduated at that. So that was the 2000 season, one of the most successful seasons in Iowa State history. We actually just celebrated our 25 year anniversary. We went to the Insight Bowl that year and won that game. So, we just this year had a reunion up at Iowa State and were recognized at a game. So, nice. After that season, I was named a starter my sophomore season and was able to keep that spot the rest of the time. So, yeah, that sophomore season was it started out as a pretty successful season. And, yeah, just able to kind of do some things on the field and was actually recognized as third team All Big 12 that season. So just the kind of the theme of the whole thing, it was just really slow gains and just kind of sticking with it. And, you know, not a lot at once, but just able to stick with it and slowly get to where I was successful.
So when we were getting through the season, you kind of get into the off season and maybe more so in spring. When spring ball was wrapped, did you make a lot of time to go back to the farm and help out with the operation? Or what was your activities like with the farm operation during this period?
Yeah, so I only lived an hour away from campus. So even during the season, I would go back because I really miss harvest time.
Yeah.
And so during the season on Sundays, I'd have a – because I'd like to go in and watch film right after games. So mm-hmm. I'd have a kind of a standing appointment with my defensive line coach and I'd go in Sunday morning. We'd watch the film, kind of critique how things went. And then I'd head back for the rest of that day and get a tractor and drive a grain cart or drive a truck or whatever for that day.
Yeah.
Just cause I really missed that. And it was just that close. I was able to have that opportunity to still do that through the season. And then, you know, during the winter time, springtime, after spring ball, we get that a little bit of break there once class is over. So I was able to get some time then. But then, you know, we spent the whole summer up there starting in like the end of May, early June, and spent a couple months up there. So
yeah,
it's kind of off and on. Wasn't a lot for any big stretch, but still tried to make the time because it was important to me and something I like to do.
Well, you know, in Iowa, the only thing you guys do in the summer anyways, mow ditches. So you might as well be, you know, training. And, you know, we love to pick on the Iowa guys because you guys have such more, you know, I mean, the topsoil just never ends, you know, and it's just, and I don't know if Scott's really seen this, but I've seen these projects. They're trying to strip all the black dirt away. And, you know, I mean, your feet and feet and feet and feet of black dirt. And here in Hastings, I mean, we got maybe 30 inches, you know, maybe 4 feet of good black dirt. These guys, I mean, they don't even, the whole precision planting thing didn't even matter. They could just blindly just throw some seeds out there and have 250 bushel corn. And, you know, out here, we're using every inch of snake oil. We're irrigating all summer. We don't even mow our ditches. We don't have time. We're busy working, you know, and these guys, it's like a manicured lawn. You drive by and it's like, okay, that's the priority. No, I like to pick on people from different states and they should pick on us in Nebraska too. But yeah, I guess from there, you know, after having a successful run as a sophomore, going into your junior season, did this dream of going to the next level, did it start to feel like it was more obtainable or what was the mindset here as a player?
No, I don't think that it even entered my mind really. Mm-hmm. I don't remember exactly when I even considered that. I think I probably had a conversation with one of my coaches, but that probably wasn't until midway through the junior season. I do remember a certain meeting with our head coach, Dan McCarney. Mm-hmm. And that was during my junior season where he pulled me into his office and we had played Texas A&M and I had a good game that game. And, you know, he sat me down and said, listen, if you keep playing like that, you know, you have the opportunity to not just play at the next level, but performances like that will get you moved up on people's draft boards. So I remember that conversation pretty vividly. And I, even at that point, I'm not sure myself I'd even considered it. So, but it's one of those things too, you know, as a college athlete, you're like, I really don't want to think about it. You know, let's just focus on, you know, what's in front of us here. And don't want to jinx it. So, that was probably the first time I'd really thought about it.
And so what accolades did you receive as a junior then at Iowa State?
Yeah. So as a junior, I was second team all Big 12.
Okay.
And then I believe that was the first year I was a first team academic All American.
Okay.
So then we had our team awards, and I believe I was co-defensive MVP of the team.
Okay.
And the top defensive lineman, a few other things like that.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, probably where, because I remember doing some testing after my junior season, and I ran like a 4.86 40, yeah, okay, and I was like 300 pounds, 305 pounds. So I remember that the same position coach that saw me at the Shrine game, he talked to me and he said, listen, you got an opportunity here. If you can kind of hold those numbers and or improve on that, that's
– yeah.
Those are first day numbers right there. So,
oh, big time.
You know, then I was starting to be contacted by agents. You know, they couldn't, it was a real limited conversation, what they could say, what they couldn't agree to anything, but
yeah,
they were kind of feeding me with the same information. Yeah, that's when stuff started to get pretty real. Like, and I could remember, like, we had these, I forget what they called it, like a Olympic, where the team would do Olympic events and Cyclone Olympics. That's what it's called.
Okay.
And so we did that, and I can just remember, you know, feeling like, you know, because we'd run a 50-yard dash, and I won that, and just doing like medicine ball throws and stuff like that, where I could just feel like the stuff that I was doing was really working. And
yeah,
so. That's when, you know, it just start thinking about, you know, what the possibilities are.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I guess, you know, through your senior season as a team, how did you guys end up performing that year? At this point, just so you understand, my mind was just completely off. So probably in about 2001, 2002, I was basically dead to the world of sports. I wasn't paying attention anymore. And even Nebraska, that was about their last year of glory, was, you know, making it to the national championship with that 2001 team. And so really beyond that, yeah, I was not paying attention. But how did Iowa State end up doing your senior year? And if you can kind of paint that picture for everybody.
Yeah. So once that senior season started, I think we played two games or three games. And I think we started out, I think it was the third game that I got hurt. So we beat Ohio in the opening game. We lost to Iowa, which was the first time in 5 years or 4 years, 5 years, which was bad. I can remember them coming over to our sidelines and grabbing that trophy and taking it. And I hated that. Yeah. That was my last time playing them. But so then the third game that season, we played at Northern Illinois, and it was a field turf field. And I don't remember what point in the game it was, but planted wrong or got rolled up on and hurt my knee, ended up straining three ligaments in my knee and tearing one of them LCL or one of those ligaments. And so I think I sat out. We went through the MRI and they told me that I didn't need surgery. I could still play that season. So I think I sat out two games.
Okay.
And then my first game back, we're like, we lost the next two games. And I remember the third game after my injury, Texas was coming to Ames, and that was Vince Young's first season.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I'm going to try it.
Yeah.
And it was still hurt, definitely. So, you know, I talked to the doctor before the game and told him to give me his best stuff because I knew that pain was still there.
Yeah.
And so I tried it, and I remember the first play, like Vince Young took off on a quarterback scramble, and I tried to plan on that thing and take off after him, which there was no way I was going to catch him anyway. But I remember that feeling, that pain, because that was my first live contact, real live action on that injury. And I knew it just wasn't there. That pain and then that feeling of, you know, just not having what I did have was just terrible. And so I remember sitting on the sidelines thinking, you know, should I sit out a while longer? And I just said, you know, let's just do it. And so yeah. I kept playing, and I actually finished the rest of that season injured, the whole rest of the season. And then, ended up having surgery after that year to repair some meniscus damage that I had from that injury and just clean it up the best they can. So that season, Iowa State ended up 2-10, which we went into that season with some pretty high expectations, but had some injuries, had some other issues. We're coming off of the best quarterback, probably one of the best in school history, Seneca Wallace, and had a hard time filling that spot. And, so it was a challenging year. It really was. But, you know, like I tell my son, you know, I think you learn more about yourself in challenging situations than things were good. So I learned a lot that year too. So, it was tough.
Is there anything you could have done in hindsight to prevent that injury from happening?
I don't think so. A lot of the coaches recommended wearing knee braces, which I didn't do. I felt like I needed every advantage I could have, because I felt like that slowed me down a little bit, didn't make me as flexible. So that might have helped. It might have taken a degree or two off the strains, but I honestly didn't even watch the film to see that what happened. I don't know exactly what happened. I've never watched it. As far as preventing it, I'm not sure if I could have or not.
You know, and then you have such a tremendous growth, you know, from being a redshirt freshman and all the progress, and then to kind of finish off on that note, were you invited to kind of a pro day, or what happened, or did the surgery kind of get in between that?
No. So before that happened, I had been invited to play in the Senior Bowl down in Mobile, Alabama. Mm-hmm. And so that was pre-injury. And after the season, had signed with an agent, and he recommended just go down there and just see how it goes.
Okay.
And so I went down there because it's a lot of interviews and a lot of interaction with teams. And so went down there and did okay. But I ended up re-injuring my knee during those practices in that game. So I believe I had another surgery right after that. Or not long after that.
Okay.
But also the week before that, the Friday before that, or Saturday before that, I got married.
Okay.
My high school sweetheart, we were both students up at Iowa State, and I had graduated in December, and our plan was to get married in January. And so January 17th, we got married. I think that's right.
I was going to say that was really, really good. Yeah. I hope my wife's not watching, because I don't even want to quote the date. It's in my calendar, but man, that was good, Jordan. Yeah. I'm proud of you.
I didn't even glance at my phone there, but no, so we had our wedding on that Saturday, and then that Sunday I got on a plane and went to Mobile, Alabama. Went down there and, went through a week of practice in the game and ended up re-injuring it. And I was at the time, after I had signed with my agent, I had moved to New Orleans. I did that in December. And so I was working out with a guy down there and a few other guys that had signed with the same agent and kind of doing some rehab also. And ended up, I think it was before the season also, I was invited to play. To go to the combine in Indianapolis. Okay. And so I don't know how much you know about that process, but that's like super rigorous and like mental and physical. So I remember that the medical portion of that, it's all 32 team doctors have an opportunity to do a full test on you.
Oh, wow.
So there's like four rooms full of tables, and every team doctor and trainer in the league is there.
Yeah.
So I think I probably went on 20 or 25 tables, and they all tugged around on my knee and did all these tests, and so went through that, and the medical portion was before the testing. So I remember getting to the testing, and I just did horribly. Like I ran a 5 flat 40, but my pro agility and stuff like that, where I had to plant and move.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah.
And so I remember right after that, my wife and I went on our honeymoon, and we were sitting in Las Vegas in a hotel room. And I remember my agent called me and said, "Hey, that didn't go well. And I know I've talked to a lot of teams who were just totally taking you off their board."
Yeah.
Buzzkill on the honeymoon.
Yeah. No kidding. So, I can remember having a conversation with my wife at that time, you know, like, is this even worth it now? Should we just move on? And, but we decided that we were going to, you know, stick with it. And, so continue to work out, and had a pro day, because I was going to try and do as much rehab and just improve and heal up as much as I could for this pro day. Mm-hmm. And that was an opportunity for all the teams to come in and look at not only me, but other players at Iowa State.
Yeah.
And so I remember that day thinking, you know, this is my chance. I feel better. I feel like my knees healed up, because that was probably a month after the combine.
Okay.
And I remember that day, you know, showing up to the weight room when all the testing was going to be, and one team showed up. Mm. It was a guy from the Seattle Seahawks. And so tested for him. I didn't test great there either. The draft was not long after that. And I just remember sitting through the whole draft. You know, my agent had told me he thought there was a pretty decent chance that I would be a late round pick.
Okay.
And he thought 5 to 7, we should expect, because he had still talked to some teams that were still interested.
Okay.
And so was sat through the whole draft, like, all however many hours it was. And
yeah.
Name was not called.
Mm-hmm.
And right after the draft, that was disappointing. Right after the draft, I got a call from like 3 teams.
Okay.
And talked to my agent about it and decided that the Carolina Panthers was the best team for me.
Mm-hmm.
So he was actually happy about that, because he said, you know, a 7th round signing bonus is not much, and I got a little signing bonus signing as an undrafted free agent, so but I got to pick where I wanted to go.
Yeah, for sure.
He really liked the organization, the coaching staff, and the team had some success. They were in the Super Bowl that February before that, so he thought that was a good fit for me.
Nice.
So I went there.
Yeah, no, that's great. And it's kind of in line with your entire story, though. You know, I mean, here you are, and you just, and I wouldn't call it luck. I mean, we all make and create these opportunities, but from being that close to just being, you know, not necessarily a preferred walk-on, and then to make that opportunity, then that name for yourself, it's just, it's kind of back to being that farm kid, you know, and just you work until the job's done. And yeah, I mean, thankfully you didn't give up there, because it really was a pivotal moment. You had that opportunity just to call it quits and I guess go back into the farm. So from being an undrafted free agent, how quick did you have to report in Carolina?
Yeah, I think we had mini camp like the next weekend after the draft. Mm-hmm. So we went down for the mini camp. I think I went by myself to the mini camp and spent a weekend there. And my wife and I, after that, packed up. I just had bought a pickup. Not long before that. So we loaded a bunch of stuff into my 2003 Ram pickup and drove down to Charlotte, and two Iowa kids navigating their way through downtown Charlotte. I remember we moved into the Residence Inn.
Okay.
Which was right downtown, like across the street from the stadium.
Okay.
And moved in down there and just started working with the team. And,
yeah. So what did it feel like from the transition from high school to college, from college to pro? Because I think what I always say is, in high school, I only had the snot knocked out of me once. And I remember when it happened, they snuck basically the starting fullback in on scout team offense. I thought I was just going to clear him out real quick, but it was my guy, Chris, and man, knocked the snot right out of me. And then you hear other people talk about that next step into college. And then it's almost a daily, if not, you know, maybe it's just a weekly thing where those things happen. The game from high school to college just feels so much more fast. The speed and the way everything is it that same learning curve from Division I to the NFL, or what did that feel like being with all these other professionals at Carolina?
Yeah, I mean, you think about it, when you're playing on a college team, there's maybe, depending on the team, you know, three or four or five or 10 NFL players on that whole team. And going from that level to, you know, everybody you're going against was one of the best players on their team in college. And I could just remember that speed and strength in the offensive line. It was amazing. And I knew that, after a conversation with one of my position coaches, he's like, Jordan, you're an undrafted free agent. There's a Pro Bowler and, you know, several good players in front of you. So if you want a chance to make this team, you're going to have to do some things that aren't going to be fun, but you just have to do these things.
Yeah.
And so he took me to the practice field and showed me all this stuff that I needed to do. He said, you need to do this before practice and do it after practice.
Okay.
And so he gave me several hand drills and foot drills and all this stuff I needed to do. And he said, this will not only help you, but the other coaches will notice this too.
Okay.
And how long did it take to do that?
So probably only 10 minutes before practice and another 10 minutes after practice.
Okay.
But I can just remember, it was probably some of the best advice I'd gotten as a pro, because, you know, I can remember some of the hand drills and stuff that he had me doing. You know, I got to the point where that stuff just felt natural to me. And
yeah,
playing that position, that stuff really helped me. And so, yeah, I went through that whole mini camp, summer training camp, and kind of did that stuff, and went through all that, and I was cut. I remember that I made it all the way to the last cuts in my rookie year training camp, and I went in, got the nod or the tap from the guy that you see on Hard Knocks, HBO, stuff like that, where, you know, they come and grab you and tell you to bring your playbook. And so I went up and met with the head coach, and he said, we're going to release you, but we want you to come back on the practice squad.
Okay.
And I thought that was great, because yeah, I knew I wasn't done, and it paid like $75,000 a year. So I'm like, yeah, sign me up. I'm in.
Beats farming, and, huh?
Yeah.
No some kidding. Years, especially this year.
I could still farm on the side too. So to me, that was a no brainer. So yeah, I did that I was on the practice squad for probably 3 or 4 weeks of the regular season. Mm-hmm. And one of the guys in front of me got hurt. And so I ended up playing 13 games my rookie year as backup.
Mm-hmm.
And so went into my next season, and I'll never forget this either. We had preseason physicals right before training camp, where you meet with the team doctor, several doctors, trainers, and they look at all your blood work and all this stuff. And I remember getting pulled into the trainer's office right after that. And he said, Jordan, you got a problem. He said, there's some levels in your blood work that we're concerned about. You need to see a doctor immediately.
Okay.
So he set that up, and I met with a kidney doctor, one of my favorite doctors that I've ever had to this day. Dr. Gritter was a nephrologist in Charlotte. And she said, you got to, we can't narrow down exactly what it is, but you have some type of kidney disease. And you have to stop playing football right now. And I'm like, okay. And so I called my agent, and he said, no, hold on. I know this doctor up in New York City. He works with pro athletes. You need to go get on a plane today and fly to New York City and see this doctor at Columbia.
And okay.
So I jumped on a plane and had an appointment with this doctor at Columbia. And he said, no, you don't have to stop playing, but we can't know what this disease is until after the season. So just play this season.
And, okay.
Kind of hope for the best. And after the season, we'll figure out what this thing is. And so played, and I really fortunate that that happened because that season, the second game of the year, that same guy that was in front of me got hurt again. And so I'm sorry, that was the first game of the season.
Okay.
And so I went in as a backup and played a little bit that game. He got hurt. And then I started every game after that season.
Yeah.
That was 2005, which was a pretty good season for us. We made it to the NFC Championship that year. It was a great experience starting all those games, playing, you know, all that time.
Yeah.
And all that time knowing in the back of my head that there's something wrong.
Yeah.
Gonna figure out after the season what it is, but was just kind of an odd feeling.
Yeah, no, I couldn't imagine, you know. And then I guess what was the next evolution then from what they could discover or diagnose with the kidney?
Yeah, so after the season they did a kidney biopsy, which is an experience all itself, but they basically take a cross section of your kidney through your stomach. And that's why you can't do it during the season, because you risk bleeding out if you take any contact to that area. So, it's in your back. It's in my stomach now because I've had a kidney transplant, and that's where my new kidney is now.
Okay. Okay.
They did the biopsy. They figured out what it was. There was all these treatments that we were going to try, and we started in on treatment right away. And went through that whole off season, continued working out, and was just trying these treatments and doing testing, and really nothing was working. And so my third year, we started the season, and I started as a backup again. And I was on, so to be a vested player in the NFL, for benefits and pension and all that, you have to have three credited seasons. And an accredited season is to be on the active roster for three games. And so I remember after the third game of the season, that next week, I had a PE, a pulmonary embolism from the kidney disease. So it sent a blood clot into my lung. Put me in the hospital for 10 days, and that was it. I was done after that.
Yeah.
But so it happened in that, after that third week. So, that was it. And, after that, lived with it for another 8 years, almost trying all these other treatments.
Yeah.
Eventually had to have a kidney transplant.
Well, and not to make light of that, you know, horrific experience, but at least it happened after the third game, right? Because it's just, it's a huge deal. And I've got one buddy in particular, only made it two seasons. And, you know, he had a great little run as a backup, even had some action as a starter. And, he's living with, I think he's on his second hip replacement. A lot of these things are coming out of pocket. And if he could have just had that third year in him, you know, it really would have benefited. And it's unfortunate because it is a lot of wear and tear on your body. And do they have any idea what may have caused that? Because I've never really heard the answer, and I never wanted to ask you, what the truth was there, because I think some people had different rumors that, oh, he just got hit so hard, and who knows? I mean, at that point, there's a lot that metabolizes. And
they called it idiopathic is the word they use. They don't know, and they'll never know what caused it. It's not genetic. It's not, I mean, they It could have been from some pain medicine, you know, that maybe started it, but they felt like, you know, if that's what caused it, it was stopped when I stopped taking it. So, no, I never did find out why. And I remember, cause that was like my goal after the fact was I wanted to figure out what happened.
Yeah, exactly.
Why did this happen? And I just remember having a conversation with a doctor and she just said, you know, it's not your fault.
Yeah.
Nope. We don't know. Nobody knows. So forget about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was kind of, that helped me kind of sit with it a little bit.
Was it both kidneys or just one of them?
Just, it was both. Yeah. So, when they do it. Yeah. So, in those 7 years between, well, it was 9 years actually between diagnosis and the kidney transplant, where we tried all these separate treatments. You know, my health just continued to decline, and the goal was because a kidney, a donor kidney, has a shelf life, and so the goal and the plan was to extend that period as long as we could so that, you know, we can get as many years on this kidney and all that. So that was a rough time because I, you know, because of that, I was sick all the time, and spent a lot of time in the hospital, had blood transfusions, things like that. So that was a challenging time. But, you know, once the transplant happened, we waited as long as we could, almost too long.
Okay.
Once that transplant happened, it was like, I mean, it just took off right away.
Yeah. So do you have to find that just through a general donor list, or is it somebody in the family?
No, my brother volunteered to do it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So, fortunate enough that, he was a match, and, so didn't have to go through the donor stuff.
Yeah.
And, yeah, he really wanted to do it. And, I think the biggest thing that I struggled with after the fact was, you know, how do you thank somebody for doing that?
Yeah.
Seriously. I think I bought him a shotgun or something like that to try to thank him, but, yeah, which he loved, he still uses it. But, but no, that was huge. And, so yeah, I just, I'm real fortunate that he did that and that was all able to work out. And I just had an appointment with my doctor a month ago, 3 weeks ago, and it's still working great.
Nice.
Almost 12 years out from the transplant now. So
okay.
Yeah, it's working great. So
are you on a special diet? Are you doing like keto or, you know, some kind of special diets trying to avoid certain things with this kidney?
No. No, I'm not. No. So the one thing they kind of stress, but not really, is trying to avoid sodium, because that's hard for your kidney to deal with, a donor kidney. But no special diet. I live pretty much a normal life. No activity restrictions, nothing like that. So just pretty normal.
Yeah. And you're probably in Bush Light country out there, I imagine. So, you know,
you got to look at, yes.
So those kind of pop up on you sometimes.
And my brother's a big Bush Light drinker. So I felt like, you know, it works. Why mess with that? So I'll continue to do that.
Yeah. Well, at least you guys are kind of now in the same boat, you know, really. So you're kind of stuck together. And I guess I would just copy what he's doing too. But, I apologize to anybody paying attention right now on the live stream. We've been getting a ton of great questions. And I just saw another one pop up that's pretty good. And it's just, I love this question here, but did you meet any other players along the way from Iowa State to the NFL that had a farm background? And assuming because, I mean, I know at Iowa State, even right now, and we're honored to have, I think, 3 farm athletes that we have NIL deals with at Iowa State. But yeah, if you want to touch on that real quick.
Yeah. I got to meet several farm kids when I was at Iowa State. And then actually, when I got to Carolina, there was a guy on the team that played at the University of Iowa, who's, I became pretty close friends with. Bruce Nelson is an offensive lineman, that currently farms now, is actively farming now. So yeah, there's plenty of farm kids at Iowa State, and I thought it was strange that I had to go all the way to Charlotte to meet the guy that played at the other school in the state of Iowa. So I played against him for 3-4 years. We were big time rivals, and it's just kind of funny that we ended up being friends and still are today.
And I never really looked too deep into his background, but where did he grow up at? And I'm assuming in Iowa, or was he from the Illinois side? Okay.
Yeah. He's from Emmitsburg, Iowa. Still lives there today. Still works on the farm that he grew up on.
Awesome.
Similar story. He was actually had hip problems when he got to the league and could only play a year or two, too. So he's back in Iowa now.
Yeah.
His problem is he went to the University of Iowa, which is not an ag school.
I didn't want to say too much. You know, it's not really my place, but I'm judging him.
Some business degree that doesn't apply to ag. And so he's always calling me with questions, but I'm happy to help him. I realize
But I've seen some of the ag school at Iowa State, and it's just they literally spend 3 semesters on mowing ditches, you know, and it blows my mind. I mean, it's just, it's such a vital part, but no, and
you got to keep them looking nice.
It's a beautiful sight, Jordan, but there was even a farm kid right here in our neck of the woods that played at Iowa of all places, I believe defensive end, not familiar with him or his family, but probably just 20 minutes down the road. And it's just, and that's what stinks about, you know, you grow up here in Nebraska and you look at what even happened this year. I don't know if you heard about this great team at Millard South, but they had 17 NCAA Division I signees, and it might've been the greatest team ever at Nebraska. And literally 0 of those kids stayed in Nebraska. Their quarterback signed and went to Alabama, you know, and it's just.
He actually committed to Iowa State first.
Oh, he did. Oh, okay.
I don't know if you knew that, yeah.
And I don't care if Matt Rhule hears this, but the whole point is, let's get some local kids. We can be 500 and play 2 or 3 farm kids, you know, but instead all this NIL money, and I guess Tractor Tuesday is guilty of this too, you know, but when you're paying these players, the NIL stuff, we're not really taking care of the local kids, you know? And again, that was the big push with Tractor Tuesday. Let's help these farm kids actually hopefully stay local, you know? And if they're not getting offered a bunch of money locally, let's find a way to get some of these other, even if they're ag adjacent type groups, to rally behind some of these kids. And, you know, then you look at Nebraska volleyball, then they had what they had happen, and then whoever the team is out of Pennsylvania made an announcement and said, hey guys, if you already have your tickets to the Final Four, come down and support whatever the school is, because our starting libero's from Nebraska, you know. And it's just, it's really unfortunate. In Nebraska, our number one export is our talent. And we just continue. I mean, seriously, we just continually lose it. I mean, our corn's better than in Iowa. We all know that. It's pretty much a gospel fact, you know, but outside of our corn, you know, and maybe our soybeans are second, but our third is our talent. And we lose our farm kids, and it's hard to get them back, you know, once they go and get into the world. But, you know, something that's really cool about Iowa State, and it just seems like they continue to make those efforts to keep the local kids local. So just
I think that was a really important to Coach Campbell and the guys on his staff, and they were great to work with, and they were great about, you know, they respected the legacy of former players, former coaches. And so I remember being connected with kids that grew up on a farm and wanted to know about how valuable the education was also. And, so we've got a new coaching staff at Iowa State now. So I'm hoping that they continue to do that. Because I think you're right. There is some value in that, and keeping some of these local kids around, especially us, you know, guys from rural schools, small schools, maybe don't have the opportunity to develop ourselves and have the resources at some of these bigger schools. So some of these kids you got to take a chance on a little bit. And hopefully they continue to do that with this new staff.
Well, and it's been a lot of fun for me, because I don't not ever really being a fan. And I think some of the players, the different mentality, you know, and when you grow up in Iowa, you're probably a big Iowa State fan, you know, very similar to being here in Nebraska. But then you see those things start to change, and you see the way that the recruiting, you know, is different. And then I think my senior year, there was somewhere north of 40 kids that went to other programs to play football in the class of 2000. You know, then you start, you know, I don't know, at what point are you even rooting for Nebraska? Or, you know, if this was happening at Iowa State, well, what are you really rooting for at this point? You got a bunch of kids from California or Georgia or wherever the heck they came from. What is this? You know, and I just, I miss that regional and that local feel of the original Big Eight and then into the Big 12. And now we're just in this whole different realm in college athletics. But here's another really cool question came up. It said, having overcome, oh, thanks for popping that up for me, so many challenges with football, Jordan, do you have any words for any farmers right now that are going through their losing seasons? And I think that's obvious. This is probably from a farmer here, but you know, I lost basically my insurance premium. That's my loss this year, you know, and a guy can kind of ballpark that. And I don't think I could have marketed my grain any better with all the negativity currently in grains. I don't know what is any advice, just a hang in there guy and, you know, get her next time, or what are you supposed to say? It's just, there's so much negativity right now in ag, and it's just, it's hard to find any sort of shred of anything to give you some optimism.
I think the important thing that I try to remember is, you know, this thing's a marathon, not a sprint. So, you know, in tough years, I try to look at, you know, longer term time periods. You know, how have we done in the last 5 years? And I've even gone back and look at some years where things were bad, and then, you know, see what happened in the next 2 or 3 years and said, you know, what if we would have hung it up that year, we would have missed out on the next three. So
yeah,
stuff like that. You know, and just knowing that sometimes you got to make it through, hopefully you can make it through the bad years to get to the good ones.
Okay.
It's you know, we're price takers as farmers.
Right. You're right.
So we just kind of deal with the hand that we're dealt. So, mm-hmm. Sometimes you just got to stick it out, as tough it is to say. Probably the best advice I could give.
Well, another thing I like about you, Jordan, is you're not necessarily a brand loyal type of farmer like Scott is over here. If it's not green, Scott doesn't want it. And, you know, and we understand the advantages of the two-stage closing system and the red planter and, you know, how our stands are so much better because of it. But if you just want to touch on briefly just a little bit about your current operation, you know, what your sons are up to, and, you know, what the future for Carson Farms is looking like.
Wouldn't say we're brand loyal. You know, we try to maybe use that to drive the best deal we can. So, because that's really is the name of the game, right? You got to kind of win in the margins here. And when margins are tight, that's, you got to look for every way that you can either make it or save it. So,
yeah,
that's kind of the way we handle it. You know, we do have some dealers that we've used for a lot of years that, you know, we've stuck with them because not only are they great to work with on the sales side, but their service is second to none. We've been with Ziegler Ag in Altoona, Atlantic, Iowa for a number of years now. And, you know, it's not only the equipment that they sell, but their service is awesome. So finding somebody like that, I think, is really important.
Mm-hmm. Isn't Ziegler a cat?
You're mostly yellow tractors then. Yeah, you get a lot of Challengers creeping around. Yeah.
Yeah, we just bought our first Fendt.
You did? Nice.
Last year. Yeah, and our combines were yellow, black and yellow, cat colors, and but it was a Kloss combine, and now they're green and white and orange, so
yeah.
Stuff looks a lot different. But yeah, it's, you know, a lot of it is the product and then the service we get with it too. You know, we're trying to, just like everybody else, we're trying to hang in there and expand at the same time. You know, with our next generation coming in, we feel like we need to continue to grow. We can't stay stagnant. So, you know, we're trying to do that at a respectful pace and, you know, taking opportunities when they come to us and, you know, growing the operation when we can do it reasonably and not really conservatively, but you know, I, with this ag degree, I've got the the ability to kind of look at not just how we're doing financially today, but to, you know, project what it's going to look like a year from now, 2 years from now. And, you know, so using that to, you know, analyze different opportunities and take the right ones when they come.
Yeah. Well,
so when you look at opportunities, I mean, you guys have a pretty diverse operation with row crops and animals. Are you looking at expanding on hogs or livestock, or how do you kind of put, because at any point in time, you know, land is hard to get, but animals, usually you just have to go to the sale barn. You can expand those opportunities. And then with the whole regenerative ag, where do you see opportunities, and how do you consider which opportunity to harvest?
Yeah. So I think the hog side is tough, just basically because of, you know, where we're located. We're not nearly as concentrated as Northwest Iowa, but there's, you know, every square mile section, there's 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 hog buildings or hog sites. So, and because of the disease environment we're in hog production, that makes it really tough to expand. Those opportunities are still there, and they're there for very brave people that want to venture into that. You know, with the cost of capital, cost of equipment to expand, that makes it really tough to expand in hogs these days. And not just because of that, but because of the risk that's there. I mean, you could invest $2 million in a hog site and show up one day and half the pigs are dead. So
yeah,
that makes it tough. So, you know, we're looking at other opportunities. We've slowly moved into the cow-calf side. There may be some opportunities there, and just continuing to grow the row crop operation to be able to capture some economies of scale and, you know, leverage that buying power and trying to drive the best deals possible. So I'd say expansion in every area. We try not to say no to immediately no to any opportunity, but just using that analysis to take a pretty good look at it.
Yeah.
Are you getting manure out of your hog barns that you're using on the farm, you know, as like a second resource or, you know, that sort of thing? So if you got cow calf, you probably have it on pasture and then you're feeding hay or maybe running your corn stalks during the winter.
Yep. So we have deep pits under our hog barns, so we're confinement feeding operation. So we're able to capture all that manure, and so we'll spread manure on, you know, just over 1,000 acres every year. So, you know, it's, I told people, coming out of some pretty challenging years and poor production, and you know, it's a challenging year when you're putting a value on, you know, you don't just know it's valuable, but you're actually putting a dollar figure on what your manure is worth if it were commercial fertilizer. So we know that's valuable, and we appreciate having that, and that's not the reason, but it's one of the reasons that we keep the hogs around for sure.
Have you considered moving into organic since you have that organic manure supply, or any of the regenerative strategies?
We have, yes. We've looked at that. It's not something that we've jumped into yet. It's something that we've looked at, and it's something that I don't think I'd rule out, if the opportunity arises. It's something we've looked at.
So on the feeder pigs, how many hogs do you guys currently keep in confinement, and how many facilities, do you operate?
Yeah. So, we're a farrow to finish operation. About 1,500 sows. And so at any one time, we have between usually around 20,000 pigs on the farm at one time.
Wow.
You know, you look at pork powerhouse lists, things like that, that's a pretty small pig farm. So,
yeah.
But it, you know, it's a good fit for us. And, you know, it allows us to diversify enough and be able to use those other things that kind of help the operation from the hog side too.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you have any other outside help, you know, outside of the family that are helping with that, or is it just mostly in-house?
We do. Yeah. We have 7 other, full-time employees. So, yeah, there's, 9 family members here and then 7 full-time employees.
Another question popped up, and you know, a lot of this might be more machinery based, but it's surprising some of the innovation that you see even in livestock. And is there anything with any sort of technology or any new releases that you're interested in, Jordan? Because really what I'm doing on the row crop side, I mean, it's pretty straightforward. There's nothing I see with machinery, maybe outside of, you know, see and spray technology, some of these exact apply programs. But I guess, is there anything else that's of interest right now to upgrade your operation?
Yeah, so this was our first year using drones for spraying. Mm-hmm. We only ended up doing about 250 acres of it. Mm-hmm. But it was basically a weather situation where, you know, it had rained, it was just too wet to get in and get our fungicide pass on our soybeans. So, I got a friend that his son had just started a drone spraying business, a young college kid. So he mm-hmm. came out and did a phenomenal job. I was there while he did it. Was starting it, did a great job. I was really worried about his coverage. Mm-hmm. Kept adjusting his height and was messing with the wind and, or, you know, based on what the wind was giving him. And he was actually down on the farms that you're familiar with, Zach. So it was a good fit for us because, as you know, those farms are really cut up with all the stations. Yeah. And mm-hmm. So based on the weather and, you know, all those, because we use an airplane for our fungicide mm-hmm. on all other acres. So I think, you know, drones maybe got a little bit of a bad name on social media this past year because of some of the streaking guys saw. And, mm-hmm. you know, if it's like anything, if you don't do it right, it's not going to work. So,
yeah,
I think that opportunity to me is exciting just because, you know, the cost of entry on that's pretty low. And we've got some labor coming in, some young guys into the operation, and that mm-hmm. can be a good fit for some of our younger folks.
Well, then where you're at, you know, on the cusp of being next to West Des Moines now, you know, just the urban sprawl continues to come. That's what I'm afraid of on this new field. You know, there's a half a dozen houses right there. And, you know, we're not really into the Enlist. We're still Extend Flex. And you can just imagine all the flowers and the fruit trees quivering, you know, when the sprayer comes by with a hot one. And, you know, I think that's what's so nice about some of that when you have neighbors that, you know, these city people are, they have one lot in the country and they measure every single inch is their property. And that property line, man, you better keep that boom away from it. So I think there's, for some of that, that'll come in handy. I don't know. It's cool to hear that perspective because I think there is so much negativity right now. It's hard to find anything to be optimistic about. And when you're seeing some of the action in real time with these deployments, especially on the drone side, yeah, I mean, some of the streaking, but it's to be expected, you know, and what they charge me for aerial. I don't know. I mean, it's expensive to even apply fungicide and insecticide anymore. And thank goodness we did. We do basically 2 passes and we usually do 1 at V5 through the sprayer and then 1 aerial at Tassel on corn. We've only tried that on soybeans 1 season. I don't know if we really saw any advantages on the yield, but maybe more so on the ultra narrow beans, that could be a better play because some of those disease and some of that pressure, if they're not getting as much sunlight. But I'm no agronomist and I ought to preface every show, even when I'm going to say things or make medical claims, to let people know, hey, I don't know anything. I'm just repeating what I was told. Same thing with farming, you know, and I think a quote that I love to repeat was Terry Bradshaw, and they were giving him a bunch of shit about getting into farming. He said, it's actually really easy. You just wait to see what your neighbor's going to do, and then you just follow suit. So that's been kind of a part of me and my dad's operation. We just see what the neighbors are up to, and then, you know, maybe we pull it out of the shed too. But no, Jordan, it was awesome to have you on. We're probably a little bit over time, and I appreciate you spending so much time here telling your story because it's a powerful one, and I knew people in the audience would really appreciate it. We don't get a lot of activity during the live stream, but I think this will live on forever in the internet And we're hoping there's more farm athletes. There's more farm kids that stick to it. You don't have to be playing football or throwing a ball in a bucket. You don't have to be a wrestler, you know, just be a part of something, because I think, you know, having that extracurricular or being a part of something else just outside of the basics, it can really help you steer your life. You can build your network. There's so many more positives that come from just being involved, and it doesn't have to be football. Not everybody's going to be 6'6", 310 pounds and running a 4.8 40. I understand that. But for those of you that are out there that, you know, want to look up to others that have done it, there's a lot of great farm athletes. And I hope we can, you know, shine a little bit more of a spotlight that on that in the future. And ultimately, all together, go to farmathletes.com and .org and help support some of these great student athletes, because they're out there. And it's amazing, from phenomenal female athletes playing basketball to folks that are playing football right over there at Iowa State. There's a lot of farm kids that are doing a little bit extra, because just like we try to do in our operations, we try to diversify. Well, so do these student athletes and some of these extra experiences. I'm telling you, kids, if you're involved in something, if you love to do something, just stick with it and look at these stories like our friend here, Jordan, you know, and what all he was able to go through and be a part of and be right at that line where you're almost cut. But then for some reason, they just gave you that inch and you took it again. And it's an awesome story, Jordan. So thanks again for joining us. I guess for Scott Anderson and myself, Zach Bosley, Tractor Tuesday Live, we're here semi-frequently. We were only going to do a Tuesday show, but we keep getting these great guests that want to be a part of it. And I think we've got a really fun one next week on Wednesday. And we've got a couple other big shows to promote here coming soon. So looking forward to showing you a little bit more here and what we're doing at Tractor Tuesday. And with that, please click like, please subscribe, and look into what we've got going on. And I guess that's where we'll let it be for this week. So for everyone tuning in, thank you for your time. Jordan Carsons, thank you. Scott Anderson, thank you. Zach Bosley, I'm signing off. Have a great weekend, everybody. Till the soil